Liz Mel, and I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. So yeah, thank you, Judy, for asking me. Something quite pertinent is I come from a family of addicts. My parents were feeders, so it'd be like they would use alcohol. They're alcoholics, and they'd cook these fabulous meals and feed us. And I think it was very peaceful when there was food around, and all of us, I really enjoy eating. So what turned out to be just something fun later on would turn out to be something full of terrible, terrible consequences. And I poo-pooed OA for a long time. I just thought, like, I think like everybody else in society is like, what is OA? God, it sounds like a joke. Because if you just take that title by itself, it just doesn't, it just, because at school they used to tease large children and be quite brutal. And I don't know, but in my experience, I think overweight people are looked down on. It's immediately thought that you're stupid, that you haven't got a high IQ, that you're thick. Sorry, I'm just saying it how it is in my experience. So no offense meant, of course. And then at school, because I came from Sri Lanka and we got here when I was seven, and at school in England, they used to give you cooked meals. And I thought it was amazing because we had delicious food at home and delicious food at school. And so food became like just free, a free comfort zone. And it wasn't really until I got to about 14, and by then, those days we were still getting cooked meals at school, that we had summer holidays, 6 week summer break, and I went to visit a girl, a friend down the road. She opened the door and she goes, "You put on weight," and it was like, it's like being kicked in the guts. I was like, shh, completely horrified, and I immediately went on a diet at home, and I had like toast, for 3 times a day, and I lost the weight. And I always remember this, my clothes were always a little bit on the tight side. But at school, there was so much competition and a sense of paranoid self-awareness. So I'd always try and control and just try to look reasonable. And then when I left school, my life sort of got really chaotic very quickly. I got into a lot of tumultuous relationships with addicts. And I found I started drinking quite heavily and interspersed with takeaways and food and lots of breakups and not being able to function because I had a lot of trauma because my parents were alcoholics. And somewhere along the line, I found that junk food entered my life, became a great passion because it answered all the questions. Because as far as my disease was concerned, we've got Mel now cornered and she's eating a load of toxic food. This is fantastic. She's drinking herself to death and she's eating loads of rubbish. I had no idea, and my brain would not accept that food was addictive, let alone the booze. And I think when I was about 26, in fact, a bit younger, 24, by then I was drinking quite a lot and eating a lot, and my weight was going up and down like a yo-yo. And I remember sitting in a park with this girl that was just basically using me, and I had my arms behind me, so I was leaning on my arms. She goes, "Your arms are so fat. God, your arms are massive." And I was like horrified. And I thought, "Wasn't it the position that I'm sitting in?" She goes, "No, your arms are really fat." So I was getting like these weird messages. And at that point, I think I was able to still go on these little diets on and off. But I went out with this boy, and when we broke up, I hit a kind of decline, and I went into overdrive with the food. And I remember one night drinking loads and then ordering pizza and eating loads and loads and loads. And I think God saved my life that night because I felt vomiting, like I'm going to throw up. And a lot of people die if they vomit and choke on their vomit in their sleep. It's quite common. And somehow I turned over and just went bleh, on the floor. And it was a mess in the morning. But for my size, I'm not even 5 foot tall. I became obese really quickly, and I felt terrible. But my denial was powerful, so I've gone by bigger clothes and hold down jobs and hold it all down, just holding it all together, sitting on top of all this crap that's going on underneath. And and I remember people taking the piss out of me. I'd go around to my parents wearing big baggy shirts over leggings and just looking like a round ball, and just I was a funny fat person. And so I'd make jokes about being a human dustbin. My cousins came around, hadn't seen me for months. I remember walking down the high street with a girlfriend, and people that I saw in nightclubs I used to go to would just stare at me, because isn't that a girl? Because I'd just gone from being like a beanpole to being like Michelin Man. So there was a lot of like massive weight gain and just feeling really bad. But the denial was massive. As long as I look good over here. I carried on like that for decades and decades and decades, just fat thin, fat thin. But I remember that particular weight gain remained with me for a really long time. I just couldn't shake it off. And I'd always remain. I know a few girls in the fellowship that talk about remaining the right side, the wrong side of slim. Like they never really get really big, but they can never quite shift or be a sort of healthy weight. And I think that's another part of the disease, which is just keeping you in a place where you can just hate yourself enough. I had a lot of denial, and eventually, when the drink was nearly killing me and I started vomiting all over the place, I thought, like, I sort of stumbled into AA and then via that OA. And I remember the doctor, because I got very bulimic then, because you see, if you throw up all the food, you can drink more because you want to eat, and then you're full up and you can't eat, drink. It's a really vicious cycle. So I went to this eating treatment center, eating disorder, kind of like serious eating disorder clinic downtown. And these nurses were talking to me, and I think they looked at me like I was barking mad, or that's how I felt, because they were telling me dangers of what I was doing, because I was like vomiting four times a day and really underweight. And they said that, if you keep, this is the reasons why you should try and amend your behavior. But I said to them, you don't understand. I get up and I take loads of vitamins, and then later on I have a massive breakfast and vomit it all up, which doesn't matter because I've taken all the vitamins and they've all been digested, so the vitamins are in my body. So if I go and vomit, I'm okay. Mel's okay. They didn't speak. They were gobsmacked, and they gave me a phone number. So I rang some other place, and I actually got into an argument with the treatment centre, with a woman that was running this agency, because she kept telling me, you're anorexic. I said, no, I'm bulimic. We actually had an argument. I despair of outside organisations now. I do. I despair. I don't look down on them because they help people. But they couldn't help me because I've got a malady. I've got threefold illness. I've got something wrong with me that I don't think the medical people understand. I've got something sitting on my shoulder that tells me that if I go and eat things that I'm allergic to, that cause all kinds of chemical reactions in my body that they don't do to the average normal eater, that I'm setting myself up for to compulsively eat and go a bit bonkers. They just don't get that. They just think a diet will fix everything. And it does for a lot of people, but not for me. But I was still in denial about all this. I think I carried on for decades. I stumbled into OA, I stumbled out. I got abstinent, I got scared and I got abstinent. And then I started eating things that I shouldn't. And I opened a couple of meetings. I think I even sponsored someone once. I got a sponsor who dumped me because I kept relapsing. I just couldn't get my head around it. And I was scared and I was desperate, but I couldn't get abstinent. I remember at one meeting that I took my brother to, who's basically killing himself with food. And we felt really supported. And I love what these people were talking. It sounded like magical, flowery. It all made sense, but it wasn't going from the head to the heart. My head was going, yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, of course you're allergic. Of course, blah, blah, blah. But I couldn't stop eating. And I couldn't get over that bridge, of denial or whatever it was that was keeping me in the disease. Today, I know it's a malady, and it's the disease is a power greater than me. And then, so I would have, I think I just kept going in and out. And meanwhile, I was having a go at the steps and asking for help, but I just kept stumbling in and out because I couldn't get it, cut long story short. about 18 months ago, I was just sick and tired of, like, women at a certain age, their bodies go out of sync, you know, you get the change of life, and you stop being sort of fertile, and your body changes, and you sort of get old internally and externally and everything else, and you get all kinds of fluctuations, and you feel really crap, and you get really, you can get a bit chunky too, because your body's not going to process weight. And I went to a doctor who, my family has type 2 diabetes from alcoholism and overeating, and my ankles were getting really fat. I was really big as well. And I went to this doctor, a Chinese doctor, who I really liked alternative medicine. And she was looking, I was saying, look, my feet and everything. And I was getting all kinds of symptoms of tiredness. I just felt weird all the time. And meanwhile, I couldn't put the two and two together that it was a sugar and gluten, because I'm not a sugar addict. Because I don't eat cakes and things, but I eat loads of croissants and flour-based stuff. But that's not sugar. This is what my head said. So she said, are you type 2? Are you a diabetic? Because the way she examined my body, and the fear of God just went right through me, thinking, oh my God. And all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, Mel. Weren't you just running down the road to chase the ice cream van? Weren't you jumping in your car following an ice cream van? And you're not sugar addict. I started to kind of like get this moment of clarity. The penny dropped and I thought, there's something. Even though I don't believe this, I'm going to accept it. So I got myself a sponsor and started working the program and just coming religiously to it. I've always loved this meeting. I've always looked up to this meeting. And, you know, you're all like gurus to me. And I started to listen. I think the literature in AA says we became willing to do all these things as only the dying can be. You know, it's like somebody threw me a lifeline and I was just hanging on for dear life and just thinking. And I started to read and understand that it's a very powerful compulsion to eat yourself to death that I have, and that it will take me out. It doesn't need much to send me out there. So I needed to get a higher power. And I started to read all the literature and listen to the meetings and get a sponsor. I've done this before. I've done it like 5-6 years ago. And I had a sponsor. I was talking to her and I was relapsing. She was very supportive. But I got a new sponsor, and I don't think there's a limit on sponsors, because somewhere in the literature it does say, you know, they're just other people that guide you the right way. But I'm working with this new lady and stuck with her. And she took me through the program, and I began to just, I don't know how to explain it to you guys, but basically, whether I believed it or not, I was willing to do the work and accept that I had the disease. And then the belief and acceptance came the longer I sort of processed stuff. And I did my work and I made my amends. And then my brother said something bizarre, maybe 6 months into working the program. He goes, you've completely changed. You're a different person because you're a lot calmer and all these things. He said, you even your texts, you write differently, you talk differently. And then I started to look back and think about my mad behavior. It's not just that I eat like a, you know, like it's going out of fashion or get discomfort and then I have to go and eat. It's the fact that I behave really crazy. You know, I can jump around like a child and be really immature and hurt people's feelings. Even today, I read something about self-control. As soon as I started reading it, I said, yeah, my sister-in-law needs to read this passage. I started reading all these things and thinking about all the people who need self-control in their lives. And then I went, wait a minute, Dodo, I think this is talking about you. And I was like horrified to realize that I need it. I need self-control. I thought, oh God, this is a program again. It's about me, isn't it? So stop. Just look inward. I need self-control. Not just obviously with food and the thinking around the food, because it all starts with, you know, when I start allowing a food that I've given up on back into my life, there's something going on. You know, there's something I can't face. There's something uncomfortable. There's pain. I ate on pain. Very violent alcoholic parents. So I've been given a solution that works if I'm willing to accept it on a daily basis. Just like when I first came running back scared out of my mind, I wasn't sure, but I was willing to accept maybe I can't eat this stuff. And that's where I still am. Maybe I can't eat this stuff. It's not going to kill me, but I've done a lot of research, and there is research, scientific research, that is kept out of the press because it will
look gentle better. Reminder, Mel.
Thank you very much for that. In my last 5 minutes, I'll talk about the things that I've learned that I hope will help you. You know, I did a lot of research, and there is scientific fact that certain foods that we eat today have been doctored with, and they are just not what they were back in the day. And there are certain people who can't eat these foods because biologically and physiologically, certain people process these foods differently and they have a detrimental effect on your brain. Like some people can drink alcohol and they're fine. But some people drink alcohol and they take their clothes off and on the underground and do a wee in the underground because they think they're in the toilet, right? So this is like evidence that there are some people that just cannot do it. And I thought, well, I read this article about this guy did an experiment. He's a doctor and he doesn't get any press because he's going to affect the industry that make these things. And he said he did a scientific experiment that all these people were coming into him and he decided to change their diet and he took them off certain foods and they calmed down. These people's mental health improved. And I think that sort of, I've read that many times, but this time I was willing to believe it. I was thinking, yeah, these things affect me mentally. Because when my brother told me I'd calmed down, it'd been over a period when I'd given up certain foods. And I was like really kind of sad and touched as well that I had behaved like a childish person and, you know, just being inappropriate at family get-togethers, like acting like a child, you know, making jokes that aren't really funny and squeezing my nephew's bottom and going, it's like a mad person who was like off the head because I was eating stuff that was making me just... I wasn't really able to correlate, you know, what was appropriate and what wasn't. I was behaving like a person that was drunk on food. So what do I do today? Well, I come to these meetings and I ask for help. I ask for help all the time. I need as much help as I can get because I know what I'm up against. You know, addiction is not a joke. And people die. People die. And I've got people in my family that I'm very worried about. Quite upset about. My brother's obese and he's in total denial and he's killing himself. We went for a job and they have over the last maybe 9 months postponed his start date and keep giving him excuses because this job, you need to pass a medical test and the medical test highlighted lots of things that we know is wrong with them. He's on the verge of a stroke or a heart attack or diabetic coma. And he just keeps telling me that he's waiting for them to send the uniform and give him a start date. That this is a very famous company, you know, the big British company, but, they are just postponing his start date and sent that to his doctor. So I'm scared for him. I'm scared for a lot of other people in my family. My sister became diabetic. My parents are diabetic. And it's not what I know that keeps me abstinent. It's the grace of the higher power. I believe that because I ask God every day. And I'm given the power just for today to make sane decisions. I might rock the boat a bit. And then I get scared and go, oh my God. And I just jump back into, you know, I keep paddling the paddle boat back to recovery. And I talk to my sponsor regularly. I do step work. I help other people. I'm very happy to be abstinent, but doesn't mean that life doesn't happen. Life happens all the time. There's loads of crap in my family, but that's just life. Everybody has problems, but not everybody's going to go on and stare at the cakes. Okay, Kyle, stare at the cake. You just do... It just still sounds bizarre to me that I go and stare at food and want to eat food. It just sounds, but I accept it, you know, that's what I do. Dead time, I accept. You're not normal and you don't eat normal. You never will eat normal. And really, that's about it. I have a higher power. I do septens. I pray for people who I want to correct because I still think I have to correct and help everyone because I'm the oldest of five children and I think the solution is telling my sister-in-law who's mad that she's mad on sugar and she's mad on this and nobody wants to hear other people tell them what to do or how to live their lives. And I'm not speaking to my family, certain people at the moment, but as I've heard and I also believe that God's rejection is God's protection and that we just need space away from each other to calm down. So I hope I've helped you. I feel like I've waffled on about this, but I haven't vomited for 18 months. You know, I haven't purposely gone and bought loads of food and sat in my house and ate it all. I felt like a bag of shit. And I don't want to forget the way I felt when I ran back to OA, knowing that I'm going to die if I carry on. Not literally, but spiritually hopeless. And that's what is waiting, you know. It's a killer. Stay well. Thanks.